Ruchim Abayim, welcome everyone. Such a great zuchus for us each and every year to be able to host these series of shiurim. I think it's already about the 15th year. Ezra Hashem, B'liayim Hara, that we've been privileged to host these shiurim to try to help us prepare a little bit for the holiday of Shavuos. This entire series this year, sponsored by Richie and Sherry Hagler, in memory of Richie's father, Yosef Mordechai ben Rav Tzvi Yehuda, Zichron Lebracha, in the merit of all the learning we do tonight, the Neshamish to have an Aliyah. Tonight's shiur as well, we give a very special thanks to the Stroh family for sponsoring the shiur tonight in memory of Tzipora Bas Yaakov, Mrs. Faye Stroh, Ed's mother, in the merit of the learning that we do tonight, both Neshamos should have an Aliyah. You know, there's something interesting about the parasha we're going to read, that it sounds like there are rewards that happen in this world. We generally assume, the Gemara Paskins in a few places, Schar Mitzvah Bahai Alma Lecha. Generally speaking, we don't assume there's going to be reward in this world, but there are some mitzvos that seem to be an exception to the rule. We say every morning, the Mishnah in Peah, there's some things that we eat the reward in this world, we get reward in this world as well as the next world. And there are a number of things that are listed there. So most of them are Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. And we understand that Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, we understand why you get reward in this world. The Maharal explains that when you make life good for someone else in this world, it makes sense that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to make life good for you in this world as well. It's not just when you keep Shabbos, so your reward is the next world. Schar Mitzvah B'Hai Al Malach. But when you make life good for someone else in this world, you go out of your way to help somebody else. Hachnasas Orchim. So it makes sense that you should have life good in this world as well. You made someone's life in this world good. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to make your life good in this world. But what about Talmud Torah? Talmud Torah, Keneged Kulam. Talmud Torah is not a mitzvah Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. What's Talmud Torah doing in the Mishnah? So the Maharal says so beautifully, Talmud Torah doesn't affect what's going on in this world. The whole world was built based on Talmud Torah. This whole world is built for Torah. Shlosha Dvarim Ha'olam Omed Ala Torah. Im Lo Brisi Yomam Malayla Chukol Shemayim Ba'aretz Lo Samti. If not for the covenant of the Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't have created the world in the first place. Bireishis Bishvil HaTorah Shenikra Reishis. When I think of our speaker tonight, so many things one can say about Rabbi Mansour. We've been zocha now probably about 6 or 7 years in a row, something like that, to have Rabbi Mansour come and inspire us in our Beis Medrash. And one of the unique aspects, I think, of Rabbi Mansour is the way that he takes the deep ideas of Torah and applies them to life, applies them to the world. He understands this idea that Divrei Torah are the foundation of the world that we live in, the real world, in quotes. The world that we have to do with, the world of human beings, the world of where we are in this world, the Olam Hagashmi. He understands that the whole foundation of this world is Torah. And the Torah has something to say about every little aspect of this world. The Torah is truly the foundation of this world. And that's why, when a person studies Torah, Ochel Peroseim Ba'olam Hazeh, says the Maharal, it has to be that there's reward in this world, because the Torah is the foundation of this world. Karen Kayemus Lola Olma Baba, but of course you also get in the next world. It's a tremendous privilege for us to once again host for Divrei Torah. Please give your undivided attention to Rabbi Eli Mansour.
Thank you. a warm introduction and a beautiful interpretation of the Maharal that I actually never heard before, but it makes a lot of sense. As all of you know, I'm invited here from year to year, and I look forward to it. That reminds me that Shavuot is around the corner. I'm also given usually a topic to speak about. I was asked this year to speak about Pirkei Avot, and I acquiesced. I think we have the same custom that we learn a perek a week until we get to Shavuot. This week we're in the fifth perek, so I chose the 14th Mishnah. I'll follow the tradition by saying the Kol Yisrael, Yishlam Chanek Na'olam Abba, Shne'emad Ba'amech Kulam Sadikim, Na'olam Yirshu Ares, Nesem Mata'ay, Ma'asi Yadai Behitpa'el, Arba'am Midot Bede'ot, Noach Lech'os, Ve'noach Lelatzot, Yatsa Secharo Behetzedo. Kashe Lech'os, Ve'kashe Lelatzot, Yatsa Efsedo Be'secharo. Kashe lichos v'noach lirtzot hasid. Noach lichos v'kashe lirtzot lasham. Well, the Mishnah here, for good reason, talks about four deot. Arba'ah deot yesh. I wonder how you would explain the word deot. I guess since the Mishnah is talking about, is this moving down? The Mishnah is talking about chaos, anger. So I have to assume the word de'ot, in context of the Mishnah, it means temperament. So there's four different types of temperaments. And the trick microphone is on that.
Here's the tea. Doesn't want to hear the derasha.
So if we're learning the Mishnah that there's four temperaments, which I'll accept that at least in the beginning of tonight's Derash, and then the Mishnah goes along and says there's one fellow that is Noach Lechos. He is very easily provoked. He flies off the handle very quickly, but at the same time he's Noach Leratzot. He is very easily appeased as well. Not such a good guy, the Mishnah says. His good behavior is that he's easily appeased, but that is offset by the fact that he's easily provoked. Probably not so easy to live with such a person, because you don't know what's going to provoke him, you don't know what's going to anger him, you don't know what you're going to say that's going to, you know, enrage him. People have a hard time living, you're on eggs. You don't know what you're going to say, what you shouldn't say, because he's very easily provoked. But at the same time, after he gets angry, he's okay, forget about it, he moves on. The second fellow in the Mishnah also is not perfect. He also has a good trait in the sense that he's kasher lichos. He doesn't get angry that quickly. It takes a lot to provoke him. That's a good thing. But once he gets angry, he's kasher l'ratzot. He holds it in for a long time and he has a grudge. Well, he's not so difficult to live with, this person, because he doesn't get angry that often. And the fact that he bears a grudge, that's his problem. Scientifically, those that get angry and then hold it inside of them will probably hurt themselves more than they'll hurt others. Studies have been proven already, migraine headaches, heart attacks, high blood pressure, all those are symptoms and consequences of holding the anger inside. The fourth, we'll jump to the fourth person in the Mishnah, which the Mishnah calls him Rasha. He's the one that's Noach lichos v'kashen l'natzot. He gets angry very easily, and once he gets angry, he's going to be a beast. He's a rasha. And then you have, interestingly, what the Mishnah calls Hasid. Hasid is the the pious one, even more than pious. And the Mishnah says the pious one is kashen lichos v'noach l'natzot. Hard to get him angry, and he's very easily appeased. Interestingly, I made a notation on this Mishnah. You could be a Hasid and still get angry from time to time. It's just kashen lichos. Doesn't say he never gets angry. He gets angry from time to time, but he's still called a Hasid because it's a very short bout, and right away he moves on. That's basically the Mishnah. But before I go on, I must make a very important introductory statement, because I feel there is a great disservice whenever rabbis or speakers get up and they talk about this midah of kaas, of anger, which clearly is a very important topic to talk about. Maimonides writes in his Hilchot Te'ot that whereas in most midot, most personality traits, one is supposed to be somewhere in the middle of the spectrum. It shouldn't be an extreme. It's the middle of the road theory of Maimonides. However, he says there are certain exceptions where the extremity is the rule. And one of the exceptions, he says, is kaas, anger. There's no middle of the road when it comes to anger. So you have to be an extreme where anger doesn't enter your personality whatsoever. He even talks about when you're reprimanding your children, it should only be a facade on the outside, but inside you have no anger. So obviously Maimonides held that it's an important trait to talk about. Nachmanides, as you all know, in his famous letter that he wrote to his son, he didn't realize that letter is going to become a best-selling book. Somebody stole the mail, it's a federal crime, but nonetheless, somebody stole the letter from the mailbox of the Ramban's son, and we have this letter today. And in the beginning of that letter, he says clearly, speak softly, and by that you'll save yourself the worst of all, the most toxic of all, the midot, kaas. So we have concurrent opinions, Rambam and Rambam, both are putting kaas on the pedestal of the most important midot to keep away from. If I wanted to go to the Kabbalah for a minute, Rabbeinu Ha'ari said, on the day that you get angry, you must go to the mikveh. Which he held that it's not enough just to become appeased. There's a certain lingering contamination on the body that needs immersion in the mikveh. I actually don't go to the mikveh every day. I try to shower every day, but I don't go to the mikveh every day. I go on Fridays. And I follow the custom of the Arizal that when we dip, we have a special kavanah for kaas. He said that the word mikveh men kovad heh numerically equals 151. The word kaas equals 150 plus the word. The kolel, they include the word, is 151. So he says when you immerse yourself in the mikveh, you should have kavanah. Mikveh gematria kaas. And that's able to, clean oneself from the angers that he had maybe during the week. So again, it seems that Arizal also held Kabbalistically that the Midah of Kaas is on a different level. So that's why I chose the Mishnah tonight to talk about this Midah. But again, as a preface, and here's why I think the disservice is done. So the rabbis get up in the speech and say, and therefore you cannot get angry and it's a terrible thing, but they don't define it. What does it mean getting angry? What does it mean getting angry? I don't believe it means the emotional feeling that a person has inside of him when he's provoked. Somebody is agitated by somebody else inside of him, he starts to percolate. His heartbeat starts to race and his pulse goes up. Personally, for 99.9% of the population, I don't believe you can control that. That is something that's reflexive. If somebody is going to provoke you, inside of you, automatically, you're going to have that feeling. That's not the anger that I believe the rabbis are talking about. That's an impossibility. They're telling them, never get angry. That's telling a person, don't blink. It's telling a person, don't breathe. That's something that's, it's a natural reaction. Now, although I will show you that there were exceptions to the rule in Shas, but I don't think that that's something that we have to yet strive for. What we have to talk about is the response to that feeling. That's what is incumbent upon us. That feeling inside, which is automatic, causes a response, and it's the response that the rabbis are concerned about. We might call the response in the common vernacular the rage. Whereas anger is something that's inside of us. That's not so bad. But it's the reaction, which we call rage, which clearly is in our ability to control. That you can't say, well, you know, it's out of my control. It's a knee jerk. It's a reflexive. No, the rage, whether it's violence or raising one's voice or other type of aggressiveness, and then the retention of the emotion after the fact, which we could call in the modern word, we'll call it resentment. That's also in your ability to control. So there's three words. Let's make it very simple. There's anger. There's rage and resentment. We're not talking about anger tonight. Anger is something that's an automatic, I believe. And to tell a person not to feel angry when he's provoked is almost an impossibility. We came to talk about tonight at the second two levels, which would be the reaction, or the response, which is rage, and the resentment. Now, I have a proof that I'm right. Who says I'm right? Well, I'll prove it to you, because there's a Zohar HaKadosh that says anybody that gets angry, kol ha-ko'es, ki'ilu oved avodah zarah. You know, it's tantamount as if he even worships idolatry. This is a Gemara on Shabbat, same type of language, but the Gemara adds one caveat. The Gemara says, ha-shover kelim b'hamato, somebody that breaks vessels in his anger, it should be tantamount in your minds as if he's worshiping idolatry. Interesting. So we see that the idolatry is not for the anger, it's for the rage. He reacted, he took a dish in anger and he threw it against the wall, or you know, he kicked something. That's where the Avodah Zarah is. It's not just called a ko'es. The feeling inside of anger is not tantamount to idolatry. But once somebody takes a reaction and breaks something or does something as a result, there's the Avodah Zarah right there. That's what Hachamim are concerned about. And we've seen it. I've seen it. A fellow once I saw was watching a sports game. It seems that it wasn't going his way. He must have had some money on it. And all of a sudden, play that went against him, and out of control, he took his fist and he threw it in the wall. Now, what's the reason you're throwing a plate or throwing your fist into the wall? Besides the fact that till today he's suffering from that foolish act, but that's considered tantamount to Avodah Zarah for whatever reason. So therefore, Hachamim were very, very careful. That's why I said, we're doing a disservice when we don't define terminologies. We're just going, don't get angry. Don't get angry. I get angry. It's human, it's inside of us. What they mean is don't have rage. And then they mean don't have resentment. Now, if that's the introduction, I'm also reminded of what the Gemara says in Eruvin. If you have children that need to get married, this Gemara is very important. If you yourself need to get married, the Gemara is doubly important. The Gemara says that a person can be recognized in one of three ways. Bekiso, bekoso, bekaso. What does it mean? The Gemara assumes that people are fake. That people are able to disguise themselves and appear as decent, upstanding, normal citizens. That was going on since the times of the Gemara. So the Gemara needs a litmus test. How do you expose someone? How do you find out who the real person is? We've seen it on the news many times. You know, some guy goes into the post office and, you know, he shoots up, God forbid, all his co-workers. And then they interview and say, oh, the guy was the nicest guy, we can't believe it, you know. The last guy we thought would do such a thing. It's always the nicest guy. And what's the explanation? He was never the nicest. He didn't just turn into a, you know, a savage that morning. He was not a nice guy the day before as well. It's just that he was able to cover it up very well, to fool his co-workers to think he's a nice guy. So, okay, when it comes to a postal worker, maybe it doesn't bother us so much. Most of us don't work in the post office, but we come in contact with people. So how are you going to know who a person is? So the Gemara is very simple. Three ways to tell, and it's fail-safe. It's guaranteed. Gemara says, number one, koso. Once he starts to drink intoxicating beverages, so since it dulls his brain a little, so he's not as sharp to cover it up anymore. So the truth of his nature will come out. He's not on guard anymore. That alcohol causes him to lose that, you know, that savviness to cover up. If a girl wants to get married to a boy, she should go see him on Purim. See the way he behaves on Purim. And you see, you know, some people on Purim, they drink and good things come out of it. You see them praying to God and learning and crying and, you know, devekut and all that type of stuff. And then other times you see the real, you know, the postal worker come out. That's kosov. And then you have another way. And each one is exclusive. You don't need to do all three. Each one on its own works. Kiso. Touch his pocket. You might get electrocuted. Whereas a person, when things are going fine, he's a decent guy. But also when it comes to money, and all of a sudden there's a dispute in who the money belongs to. And that all of you, some people say, oh, I keep the change, I don't worry about it. We'll split it 50-50. We'll make a pishana, we'll make a compromise, don't worry about it. Oh. See, then you see the real character. But some people, once already you get this pocket, all of a sudden, like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, you see a different animal of people. That's the real person. He was able to cover it up until he exposed them. And then the third, which is probably the most telling, is provoking. Push his button. Activate his cars. You know, cut him off when he's driving. Then you see the real person surface. Pass on. You know, everybody's fine. If you don't provoke me and we're having a good conversation, everybody's fine. I can control myself and be decent. But when things don't go right, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm agitated. Now, already, the ka'as is like the kos. It's a dry drunk. Without the alcohol, but the anger itself is able to cause me to become dull enough where I'm not able to cover my true self. There's a great rabbi called Ben Yishai. I know you heard of the Ben Yosef Haim in Baghdad. He says something incredible. He says, the Hebrew word for covering up something is kisui. The root of the word kisui would be the letters kaf and sam. The chasot. So he says, isn't it interesting? All the three items of the litmus test have the root kaf samich in it. Because kisoh has kaf samich, because when you touch the person's kis, it's able to remove that veneer, or kosoh, it's able to remove that filter, or kaasoh. All three have the kisui. Because these are the three items that reveal the true self of a person. I always am shocked. The modern generation, when parents call me up and they say, Rabbi, we want a reference on a certain boy. I said, okay, you ask the questions, I'll answer to the best of my ability. Well, does he know how to learn? Yes, he knows how to learn. So what yeshiva did he go to? Aleph Bet Gimel. Does he know halakha? Yes, he knows halakha. Does he wear this kind of garment? Does he wear that garment? And I'm waiting for the questions. And then the questions come to an end. I said, I want to ask you a question. You under the assumption that the best guy in the yeshiva means he'll be the best husband. Where did you get that from? Where did you get this convoluted notion that if a person knows half of Shas, that automatically makes him a great husband, or vice versa, if she's the most modest girl, and she knows all the Rambans, and you know, all the Pirkei Avot, who says that that's going to make for the best wife, or for the best mother? And as if I just revealed to them a great scientific breakthrough. Really, that's not how it... Why don't you ask me if they have anger problems? Why don't you ask me if they have... Midot issues. If they're, why don't you ask me about kiso, koso, and kaso? That's the litmus test. Instead of you asking me on the great rabbi called the Stifler rabbi, once told a fellow that you need to find a good ben Torah that's a matmi that sits by the shtender all day and has good midot. So the rabbi told him back. He tells the stipler, he says, well, if he's sitting by the shtender all day, isn't it assumed that he has good midot? So the stipler said, well, the shtender is a good wife. It never asks him to do anything, never tells him to take out the garbage, never asks him to stay home and spend some time, never asks for any sort of attention. So just because he's a good husband to the shtender, it's no ramification and has no bearing if he'll be a good husband to a physical wife. So therefore you need to be a matmi to the shtender, but at the same time have good midot to the human. So therefore, it's a pet peeve why people today are so caught up in the things that don't make good spouses. They're more concerned about the I don't say trivial, because God forbid it, what they're asking is by no means trivial, but I don't believe that it's a priority. They're not asking the first question, which is midot. Midot make a good spouse. The guy can be the biggest matmid, but if he has rage and anger problems, that marriage is going to end up in bedin with all the shas in his pocket. It's still going to end up in a get comfortable. Kiso, kaso, and koso. I once saw a beautiful derasha. If you remember when the Jewish people came after Aharon and Moshe, they were complaining. So Moshe Rabbeinu tells the people, "Ve'Aharon, what do you want from Aharon? Ki talimu ala, that you're complaining against him. What do you want from Aharon? Poor guy, leave him alone." The darshanim say like this, "Ve'Aharon mahu, if you want to see who Aharon is, when you provoke him, then you know who Aharon is. You know, Aharon's no hef shalom, v'rodef shalom, yeah, he's a nice guy. But you want to know how you know Aharon's a nice guy? Not when everything is fine. V'aharon mahu ki talinu alav. When you agitate him a little and you still see that he doesn't lose his school, he still has the proper kavod and the cheretz, then you know that he's genuine." So that's the introduction to the Mishnah. My problem this year with this Mishnah, every year we read these Mishnah over and over again. Some years, these things don't bother us. We don't even see this question. Other years, the question pops up and we cannot go further. The question that popped up this year when I read the Mishnah, Arba'a de'ot. Like I started, this word de'ot is bothering me. I explained it for temperaments. Wouldn't it have been much easier, instead of giving us this confusing word called de'ot, just say, Arba'a mine adam. There's four types of people. There's the Rasha guy that gets angry at anything and never gets, always has resentment. And then there's the guy that he's easily appeased, but he's, very easily angry. Just talk about four people. Why do we talk about four personalities? We should talk about four people. Arba'a mine adam. My question, to my good luck, I searched and I found it's the Maharam Sheikh's question. Then Madam Sheikh gives an incredible answer. He says, there are certain things in a human being that you can't change. You cannot change your eye color. Versus born with blue eyes, or black eyes, or brown eyes, or hazel. A person cannot change his skin color. Now, I'm not talking about the perverted world that we live in today. Well, I'm sure all these things don't even apply today anymore, what I'm saying. You have to upgrade all these parables that you thought would last forever. But in the perverted world, today you can change skin color, Rabbi. Today you can change hair color. Today you can do anything, probably. But let's go back to the normal world that we used to live in. And these bashals were relevant. Well, there's certain things you're born with. Your voice is your voice. It's in the genome. These things you're stuck with. But there are other things, says the Maharam Sheikh, that you can change. And that's your personality change. A person shouldn't think that if he was born a nervous person, that he has to die a nervous person. That's very important to know. Because I know very many people that are mild-natured people, but I also know many people that they're just, very nervous and they're angry people. They're prone to that. But everybody has to know that it's not eye color. Personality is not the person. I'm not saying it's easy to change personality traits. Everybody knows what Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said. When he said his famous quip, that it's probably easier to learn the entire Shas than to change even a small personality trait. It's not easy. But I also remind what the Gaon of Vilna said in his Ibn Shalema, that the purpose why a person came into this world is to work on his character. And then he says, and if he's not involved in character perfection, Lama lo hayim. What is he here for? So a person has to know that distinction. Personality is not the person. The person, when he has those genetic things that were given over to him by his parents, those are his forever. But the personality that he has, that can be worked on. So the Maharam Sheikh says, the Mishnah doesn't say, Arba'a mine adam. Because if it would have said there are four types of people, you would have thought that these people are determined and predestined to be like that forever. So therefore the Mishnah has to say it's not mine adam, it's de'ot, it's personalities. And personalities can change. Even though you might find yourself in one of the three categories, not the Hasid, but good news, you too could become a Hasid. With hard work, you could manage these midot and change yourself. It's not mine adam. It's in the de'ot. It's in the personality. I think that's a very important chiddush. But I'd like to say a different interpretation. Why did Mishnah use the word de'ot? Well, if I had to explain it, I would say, well, de'ot, if I would ask you, where is de'ah, where you would point to which part of your body, you would say, well, de'ot is the brain. And if I would ask you, where is ka'as, you would point somewhere around here in the middle section, assuming that ka'as is like in the heart. It's an emotion. And our rabbis tell us that the man that's angry, clearly there's a disconnect between his da'at and his emotion, because a lot of times the ka'as is irrational. Some have said that an angry man, his defense in court is temporary insanity. The anger causes a person's mind to become dull for a moment. I'm reminded of what, the Steipner rabbi said, the famous Kiddush, when he talks about the second plague in Egypt. And he talks about that it was Makat Sefer De'im. That's Sefer Adim. Sefer De'im. That's a different plague. Sefer De'im, the frogs, actually it wasn't frogs. According to the Midrash, it was frog. There was one big frog that came out of the Nile, and the Egyptians saw this this beast of a frog, and they started to hit it, and it multiplied, it became two, and they hit it again, it became four and eight, etc. So the Steipner Rebbe asked a simple question: the Egyptians, you don't have to be a genius from Harvard to figure this out. Stop hitting the frogs. You see, every time you hit it, it's multiplying. So he says, that's a classic textbook example of what happens when a person falls into rage. Rage, people do things that are irrational. So you can't explain to a guy who's in a rage, hey, it doesn't make sense what you're doing. He hits once, the rage becomes compounded, and it's twice, and now he's in a fit, and he doesn't even know what he's doing. Meanwhile, he's only hurting himself. But go explain it to him at the time that he's temporarily insane. After the fact, when he looks back, well, was I crazy? What was I doing? It's just as crazy as somebody taking a $300 vase and smashing it to the ground because he's upset. Or that fellow that threw his fist into the wall because there was a fumble on the 40-yard line. So all these things clearly are irrational. So maybe that's why the Mishnah mentions there are four levels of de'ot, because somebody that's plagued with ka'as, it's not only a problem in his heart, it's a problem in his de'ot. It's a compromise of his intellect. So there's four degrees of how compromised a person's intellect can get. But I'd like to say a third interpretation. You know, once we're just stuck on this Mishnah, we could, you know, we can milk it for every word. And I believe all these interpretations are admitted. The ot. Well, the Gemara says in Pesachim on page 66, Samech Vav, in the name of the Shakish, says that anger has a consequence. The consequence of anger is im hacham chokhmato mistadeket ve'im navi nevuato mistadeket. Our generation is very concerned, especially as we get older, about memory. I'm not talking about people about that have diseases that affect memory, but just the fact that people struggle today in retaining information. People's memories today are much weaker than they were in the olden days. My grandmother, alayhi shalom, knew the birthdays of every one of our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren and great-grandchildren and their anniversaries. We would go there Shabbat, and she would say, you know, without a calendar in front of her, exactly the dates by heart. Today, because of the lack of using of our brain, because we rely on the gadgets, and everything could be somewhere, you know, in a note somewhere, on a computer, or in a calendar somewhere, so therefore we don't have to use the brain anymore, so it atrophies. As a result, the memory doesn't work as sharp. We don't remember birthdays, even of our own children sometimes. We have to go, oh, it was today, or it was tomorrow. We have to go onto the calendars. Oh, yes. Anniversaries. Somebody once said, best way to remember an anniversary is to forget it once. But nonetheless, the Gemara says there's another thing that causes memory loss, and that's anger. I don't know if this has been proven by the geniuses at Harvard or wherever they are, but I take the Gemara's word. They'll catch up to us like they usually do. Usually there's a 5,000-year lag between science at the Ivy League schools and what it says in the Gemara. Usually they catch up, and to their credit, usually they concur more or less what it says in Shas, but of course it takes them time to go through the process. I don't know if it's been proven yet a correlation between anger and memory loss, but the Gemara is certain that that's true, and the Gemara proves it from none other than Moshe Rabbeinu. Famous episode, Moshe Rabbeinu sends the army out to go fight Midian to kill the girls that caused the Jewish people to commit immorality. And sure enough, they come back with the girls, the ones that they were supposed to kill. Moshe Rabbeinu was livid. Vayiksof Moshe al pikudei ha'chayil. And Moshe Rabbeinu is enraged, albeit a justified rage. But nonetheless, the next pasuk says, El Azar the Kohen gets up and he starts to teach the laws of koshering vessels, like Alat Kelim. And everybody jumps and says, El Azar is teaching the law. What happened to Moshe? And they say, well, Moshe got up to teach the law, but he forgot the law. Why did he forget the law? Because he got angry in the pasuk before. So from here, the Gemara says, anger is a direct cause of memory loss, even if you're a hacham like Moshe. And then the Gemara says that if you're a prophet, it causes prophecy to dissipate. And the proof is from Elisha. Elisha, in one episode, got angry at one of the kings, Yehoram. And all of a sudden, right after that episode, he gets angry at Yehoram. He tells his musicians, bring me a violin in order to play music for me so I can receive my, retrieve my prophecy. So the Gemara says, what happened to his prophecy? When he got angry at Yehoram, his prophecy died. I once saw it that Asha. Connection between Nivu'ah, prophecy, and Chochmah. The Pasuk says, Ele Toledot Noah. Noah is Sadiq. But we read the Pasuk like this. Ele Toledot Noah. Noah means to be pleasant. Noah means to be calm. The opposite of anger. You know what the product of Noah is? Noah. Noah is a Shetibot. Nivu'ah, Chochmah. A person that's Noah, that's pleasant, the benefit that he gets, the tullah of Noah is Noah. The Nivu'ah stays with him, the Chokhmah stays by him as well. If that's true, I'd like to explain another Mishnah of Kehavah. The Mishnah is talking about the student-teacher relationship. There the Mishnah says, Lo habayshan lamed, velo hakapdan melamed. It's talking to a student and it says, while it's nice to be shy and bashful, it's one of the Jewish traits, bayshani, but there's no room for bayshanut in the classroom. The student must be confident and not shy to ask the teacher a question if he doesn't understand. He has to be willing to ask questions even though the students in his class might laugh at him. He has to be willing to ask the Rebbe to repeat it. There's no room for Baishanut in the classroom. Okay, that's good. What about the teacher's responsibility? There, the Mishnah says, Velo HaKapdan Melamed. If you're going to be a teacher, you can't be a Kapdan. You can't have a... You can't have a short fuse. Although we had many teachers that were Kapdanim. But the Mishnah doesn't recommend it. Teacher has to have a lot of patience. For simple reason, I always thought, because to teach students, you have that patience because they're going to ask you to review it, and they're going to ask you a lot of questions. And you have to be able to, sometimes they're going to misbehave. You have to be able to not be such a kapdan. Everybody's going to be in the principal's office. Everybody's mother's going to be called up to school every single day. Slow down. Don't be such a kapdan. You have to overlook things. That's what we learn as teachers. Don't be a kapdan. You know the famous teacher? The teacher in Shas, the rabbi called him Pededa. Well, he had a student that he taught every day, and it was a tutor. The problem with that student was he was slow. There's some slow students and some faster students. He was so slow, the Gemara says, that he wouldn't catch it until the rabbi had to repeat it 400 times. Now, I'm not sure if 400 is an exaggeration in that Gemara, or it just means a lot of times. But there are rabbis that learn in that Gemara, at least, that the number 400 is accurate. And then one day, Rav Pinedah came to teach the boy, and he said, listen, you know, I'm a teacher today, but I have to go do a mitzvah. And he taught him, you know, repeat it 400 times, and then he said, okay, you got it? He said, no, I didn't get it. He said, what do you mean, every day you get it after 400 times? Manishtana, why today you didn't get it? He said, well, because today he said you have to leave. So my mind was, oh no, he's leaving now, so I couldn't concentrate. So he's repeated it then another 400 times. Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz on this Gemara says, Rav Pereda only had 24 hours in his day like us. Why would he waste his time with such a student? Well, he could be doing better things. Hey, Rav Pereda, why don't you get not the slowest student in the bunch, get a mediocre student, and you can teach him, or get 20 students to teach them a lot of Torah. The time management here is being mismanaged. That's what Chaim Shmuel Levitz questions. Every day, the teacher's doing 400 times. What benefit is that to anyone? Says Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz, it wasn't for the student. Rav Pinedah understood that there's something even more important than teaching Torah, and that's working on your midot. And the greatest midah is patience. And therefore, this was an exercise of the Pinedah in his patience. The student happened to be a prop that the Pinedah felt was a godsend. And on that day where the rabbi said, I have to go do a mitzvah, and then the student said, well, I didn't get it yet. Rav Pinedah said, you know what? That mitzvah can wait. It's more important for me to work on my patience, because any ka'as Rambam says you have to go to the extreme. So that's why he was teaching. He knew that this kid's not going to come and get on with Israel. But Rav Pinedah becomes the beneficiary of Velo HaKapdan Melamed. But I'd like to say an interpretation based on what we're learning tonight. Why shouldn't the teacher be a kapdan? There are many young rabbis or teachers that come to me from time to time for advice. They say, Rabbi, you've been doing this for so many years. You're giving lectures, you're teaching all the yeshivas, all different subjects, classes. Give us an advice of going into teaching. Well, the first thing I always tell them is be yourself. Don't copy me, or don't copy anybody else. You know, they listen to the CDs, and they pick up a style, and therefore they become imitators. We have one already. We have an original. Nobody's interested in hearing, you know, a bad copy of somebody else. I don't copy somebody. I have great rabbis, but this is my style. This is who I have, and And everybody wants to hear something different. So be yourself. Don't try to mimic somebody else's style. God made you as you are. And then I tell them also, speak up to your students. The students are smart. Whenever you prepare a class, you have to respect that the student is educated. Men have to talk above them than to talk beneath them. That's respecting the audience. Sometimes the student walks out to a level of a lecture and says, what is he talking? This is a kindergarten lecture. What is he talking to us? What does he think we are? So then we have to recognize that the student is higher than you think he is. The third thing, of course, is the delivery of a shi'ur must be in a very, very clear order. One must become before two, and two has to come before three, in order that it's very easy for the student to process. It's not the job of the student to put the shi'ur together, that the rabbi throws out 500 pieces of a puzzle, and then the student has to figure out where they go. That's improper. It has to be delivered as you're building a building. If a lady would invite somebody for dinner, and she would bring out as the first course dessert, you say, that's strange. Well, just eat it. What's the difference? It's going to be the same place anyway, so eat the dessert now. Okay, then what's after the dessert? Well, now we're going to have the main course. After the dessert, we have the main course. And then after the main course, we have the salad. They say, well, you care. What's the difference with the order? You'll work it out. It doesn't work that way. And certainly in a shi'ur, it doesn't work that way either. And then I tell them what the Mishnah says. To be a good teacher, you have to have a good memory. Because a lot of times when you're giving the shi'ur, you're not looking at your papers. By then it has to be in your brain. Every time a teacher looks down at his paper, he loses the audience. Even a glimpse of the paper, reading the attention span of the student is lost. So you have to know it in your brain clear. You have to have a good memory. God forbid, instead of making a mistake to say something that's permissible is forbidden, or forbidden is permissible, you can make a mistake in halakha. When you're quoting Gemariot, you have to quote them accurately. So maybe that's what the Mishnah means. The Loha Kapdan Medamed. A kapdan cannot be a teacher because a person who's a kapdan forgets his learning. And if you're going to go into the teaching business and be a kapdan, you're not going to be teaching accurately. Because you're going to be forgetting the information, you're going to be forgetting the details. And you're going to be giving the students a compromised version of the Torah. Because the kapdanut, if it's able to erase wisdom from Moses' brain, certainly it's able to do that to our minute brains as well. And therefore, for the memory aspect, the Mishnah says, v'lo akadam melamed. So maybe that's why the Mishnah refers to the four people that are mentioned as arba'a mine de'ot. Because the Torah is clearly telling us here that there's a relationship between ka'as and de'ot. There's a relationship between what anger does to the da'a. Not only does it cause an insanity, but it also causes wisdom to flee. Now, as I told you at the beginning, there are exceptional tzaddikim in the world that they didn't have rage, that's for sure. Nor did they have resentment. But they didn't even have anger. Like who? Well, one classic example is, of course, the great Rabbi Hillel. Everybody knows the story. I'm telling you the story because I want to say a chiddush on the story. I know you know the story. There was two guys made a bet, monetary wager, if they can anger Hillel. And one guy said, impossible, and a man is even keeled, you cannot razzle him. And the other guy said, what are we talking about? 400 zoos are the way. And they made a bet. Sure enough, Erev Shabbat, which is a hectic time as it is. And the guy waits for them to get into the shower. And all of a sudden he bangs on his door, Mikan Hillel, Mikan Hillel. Is Hillel here? Now that alone should have provoked him because he's the chief rabbi. You don't call the chief rabbi by his first name. And I'm like, who do you think you are? Well, you can't be Hillel. What am I, your friend? But Hillel's a humble man. He gets out of the shower. He puts on his robe, comes to the door. And he's going to help you. Rabbi, I have a question. It must be a very big question because it's Erev Shabbat. And he called me out of the shower. Why are the heads of the Babylonians round? And he's ready for Hillel to, you know, to let him have it. And Hillel says, that's your question? This is an incredible question. Glad you asked it. You see, the midwives in Babylonia are not so adept. So when the children are born, they don't know how to shake the head right. So every kid comes out with a head like a basketball. So that's the reason. Shabbat Shalom. Thanks for coming. Strike one. He waits for them to get back in the shower again. And again, you know, the student bangs on the door. You can't get in. You can't get there. The neck gets out of the shower. And then, mind you, there was no regular showers like we have today. It was a bucket. It was hot water pouring. It was all to do. Rabbi, very strong question. Of course, what's your question? But why did the Tzubidiyot, people from this place, their eyes are like crooked or pointy? You see, they live by the beach, and the sand goes in their eyes, therefore they squint, and as a result, that causes their eyes to become inflamed. Great question, Shabbat Shalom. I can't believe it. He said, that's it. I'm going to do it one more time, and I'm going to really agitate him. The third time, he gets into the shower, boom, 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 you can't hear this, you can't hear that. And this is just going to help you. What's your question? And he says, why do the Africans have flat feet? And he says, oh, because they live on the marshland. They need flat feet to get traction. And the guy, he got in. The guy gets in. The guy says, are you Hillel? Are you the rabbi Hillel? Yeah, that's me. He says, well, I pray that there should not be more rabbis in Israel like you. He lost the school, man. Now he's yelling at Hillel. And Hillel says, why would you say that to me? He says, because of you, I lost 400 Jews. He says, oh, I don't understand. I was part of a wage. I was part of a bet. What was the bet? Well, I said I can hang you, but I see I can't. Now, in that story, Hillel didn't have any rage, that's for sure. Nor did he have resentment. The chiddush of that story is, which I believe, the greatness of Hillel in that story, he didn't even have anger. That means if you would have put a monitor on Hillel's pulse and on his heart, when the question was told to him, why do the Babylonians have round heads? Now, if that's me, you would have seen the dial. I mean, forget about it. You would have heard the answer three blocks away. Forget about looking at the dial. And that's if you came to me on a Monday afternoon, not a Friday. Erev Shabbat, the cops would have been there. Now, the greatness of Hillel is if you put these monitors on him, the pulse is the same. The blood, but it didn't affect him. That means he was so stable in his personality, it doesn't even enter him, which is incredible. One thing not to yell at the guy, but not to even feel provoked, that's hilarious. So I asked the big rabbi a question on this guy. The question that I asked was, I said, Rabbi, obviously Hillel is being tested from God. We believe everything is from God. So although the Gemara makes it like it was two guys having a bet and he came to test them, but this is a test of God. For whatever reason, God was testing Hillel's Midah of Kas. And he tested him three times. And I asked the rabbi, why did he test it three times? Well, Abraham was tested, for example, 10 times. And the rabbi explained, why was he tested 10 times? So why did Hillel need to be tested 3 times? Now, his answer to me was, which is a proper answer, well, 3 is considered hazakah. You know, you do something once, it's a fluke. Twice, got lucky. 3 times already is considered oppressive. 3 times, and 3. 3 is a charm. Okay, I accept that answer. but I wanted something deep. I opened up the books of the Kabbalah. There's a rabbi that wrote a sefer. It's called Ach Pirit Nevuah. Yeah. He says this Kiddush in Parashat Shemini. At the end of Parashat Shemini, three lines. He says it's well known that Hillel was the Gilgul of Moshe Rabbeinu. Hillel lived 120 years, and Moshe lived 120 years. Moshe was the leader of God. He says Hillel was the Cleveland. He makes some parallels between the two tzaddikim. And then he says, and while Moshe Rabbeinu was a great tzaddik, he was a hasid, but the Gemara says, three times in Moshe Rabbeinu's life, he got angry. He got angry when Datan Aviram left over the man, Vayiksof Moshe. He got angry when the daughters of Midian came back from the war, Vayiksof Moshe al Pekudei Achayil. And he also got angry the day of the Midugin, when Aharon HaKohen didn't eat from certain sacrifices, and he ate from others, and Moshe didn't understand why he was behaving like he did, but Yiksof Moshe al Aharon. Says the Pirit Nevuah, Moshe Rabbeinu needed a tikkun for those three times that he got angry. So Hillel comes back as the Gilgul of Moshe, and he's provoked three times. And each one of those times that Hillel, with a smile on his face, does not show even any internal ka'as, makes a tikkun on Moshe. So therefore, this was not a new story. This was actually a completion of an old story. This was a great tikkun that was being done to the Shabbat Moshe. Who would have believed? These guys made the wager. They didn't realize they were God's. Who knows? Maybe they were the Tatnabinam. I don't know. That's not. But nonetheless, there's a Gemara, and I'll conclude with this. There's a Gemara that says Moshe Rabbeinu went up to heaven once, to Menachot. And he saw God making crowns on the letters. Should have been a suburb. What are these crowns? And God says to Moshe, one day a big rabbi is going to expound on these crowns. His name is the Biakiva, and he's going to expound mounds and mounds of Kiddushin just on the crowns, which we think they're just artistic. But the Biakiva is going to give Dirash. Moshe have been a Mushan. Dirash on the crowns? Can I hear Dirash on the crowns? So God does a Futurama, and he puts Moshe in the Shibud of Rabbi Akiva. And he's in the back row, and Rabbi Akiva is giving a Dirash on the crowns. And Moshe cannot even understand it, it says. And he got a little depressed. Did you believe this? Moshe is in the Shibud of Rabbi Akiva. And the Biakim was giving the Rashi on the Kitari in the ground. But Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't understand the Shi'ud. Until something happened, he got appeased, but he didn't get it. Anyway, the Gemara in a different place says that when Moshe Rabbeinu went up that day to God, and he saw him writing the crowns, and this is a very hard Gemara to understand, the Gemara says, he tells, God tells Moshe. He says, "En shalom be'inecha." Where you come from, they don't say shalom. It seems Moshe had been walking to God's office. He didn't tell him good morning. So God says, "Oh, where do you come from? En shalom be'inecha. Where you come from, they don't say shalom." So Moshe Rabbeinu answers back, and he says, Yesh Eved Noten Shalom de Rabo. I didn't think it was proper to interrupt you when you're working. So God says, maybe you're right, but Hayalechan Osleni, you should have told me good luck. I'm doing a project. What is this Gemara talking about? Again, the way I understood it before tonight. Obviously, God does not need Moshe's salutation, nor does he need his good luck. But God's teaching Moshe derech eretz. You come into a room, you see somebody, shalom. So Moshe never has an answer for that. No, klum adam noten shalom to the bo. Who am I to say shalom to the Rebbe? So God says, you're right. But you should have told me. You see me doing something. Good luck, be matzliach. Not for God, but for the humans. If that's the pshat, I also have a hard time understanding this Gemara. What Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't know derech eretz? He doesn't know that you have to say shalom and good luck, and God has to teach him this basic lesson. Who are you talking to? Unless there's something very deep going on. Moshe Rabbeinu comes out of the shiur of the Rabbi Akiva, and he doesn't get it. He doesn't understand it. He doesn't understand why he doesn't understand it. So when he walks into God's office, God tells him, Moshe, En shalom b'nidecha. You know why you're not understanding it? Because you're angry at the people. En shalom b'nidecha. Moshe Rabbeinu used to get angry at the people. Every Monday and Thursday they go up to some shenanigans in the Bab. And Moshe Rabbeinu has to deal with them. Moshe Rabbeinu is on such a high level and these people are complaining about every single thing under the sun. So Moshe Rabbeinu's angry. So God says, hey, what do you think? You don't think there's a damage from the chaos? En shalom b'idecha. That's why you're not understanding the shi'ur. It's affecting the da'at. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, what do you want me to do? Klum yesheven noten shalom l'rabo. I'm doing it for your sake. The reason why I'm getting angry is for the kavod of God. So God says, no, hayalecha le'ozreni. You should have taught them right from the beginning and therefore they wouldn't have done wrong. If you wanted to help me, you would teach them better. That's a different way of learning the Gemara. Moshe Rabbeinu was perturbed. Why am I not getting the shi'ur? You're not getting it because you have ka'as. Ka'as is a blockage in the brain. Based on what we're saying now from the Kabbalah, God was telling Moshe Rabbeinu a secret. But although you have ka'as, Moshe Rabbeinu, although you transgress the anger at least three times explicitly in the Torah, you're going to have a tikkun. And your tikkun is haya lecha le'ozreni, which is Rashi Tevot Hillel. Haya lecha le'ozreni. That there's going to come a rabbi called Hillel, and don't worry, he'll fix the tikkun of the three ka'as that you have. We'll fix it on an Erev Shabbat, on that Gemara that we explained. What does this mean for us, Rabotai? Clearly it means that it is something that we have to take to heart. The Malachik is right. It's not four types of humans. It's four types of personalities. Persons cannot change their person, but they can change their personality, they can change their own. Number two, the anger affects the de'ah, it's an insanity. The Egyptians might have had high IQs, but they were hitting those frogs, the de'ah was non-existent. The angry person is an insane person. And more importantly, if anybody's interested in being an intellectual, it should bother you the most to retain your wisdom. And anger causes chokhmah or nevuah to dissipate. Ele toledot Noah. The consequence of Noah is Noah. Nevuah and chokhmah. Therefore, I say that for time. I'm not telling you go to the Gver tomorrow and make the kavanot. If you do that, matom manayim. But clearly, before we come to receive the Torah, to receive this Torah, you have to have it's all brain work. It's all stuff that needs intellect. And the prerequisite for intellect is midot. It's not enough just to worry how much pages of Shas and how many Rambans we learned. The Gaon of Vilna is right when he says you came to this world to work on your character. Ve'im lav lama lo hayim. Why would you come to this world? That is not an easy task. But we have to believe in what we learned in another Mishnah to Ke'avot. No alecha medachavim mor. It's not your job to reach the highest levels of Hillel, maybe. To not have anger even within inside of the person. But you're not free to come along and surrender and to say, I'm hopeless. And then Be'ezrat Hashem, what Allah will help us. One that comes to purify himself, he gets divine assistance. Then Be'ezrat Hashem will be able to become maybe to the level of what the Mishnah says, Kasher Lichos. The Noah Litzot, in the Mishnah's definition on that person is Hasid. That's so much of Yisroche. Amen.
We will not admire it.
that. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.